How many of us here have no fears at all? I won't ask for a show of hands. I have a list of 14 pages of fears and phobias. This is from a website called phobialist.com. The list contains literally hundreds upon hundreds of fears and phobias. Some of the more common fears are agoraphobia, fear of wide open spaces or open spaces. The opposite of that is claustrophobia, the fear of confined spaces. Acrophobia is the fear of heights. Some people don't like spiders. They have arachnophobia. Now, hopefully no one here suffers from ecclesiophobia, fear of church. Or homilophobia, a fear of sermons. Actually, I got that one sometimes whenever I speak. Actually, no, it's glossophobia. That's fear of public speaking. And then there are those who have a fear of religion, and they suffer from theophobia. Those who have a fear of phobias suffer from phobophobia. Now, since we live in the snow belt, and I include myself in this as well, hopefully we don't have chionophobia, a fear of snow. And then there are those who are afraid of long words, and they suffer from sesquipedalophobia, if I'm pronouncing that correctly. But the list of fears is almost endless, and this is nothing new. This is not meant to make light of anyone. We all have fears, including me. I don't like ladders, which, it's not even on the list. Oh, anyway. But I have the fear of ladders. Heights, I'm okay with. But the right kind of fear is a good thing. The Bible contains many examples of those who were fearful. In the first few chapters of the book of Genesis, Adam had become fearful. It tells us he was afraid after hearing God's voice. On the other hand, there are also examples of people in the Bible who displayed the opposite characteristic of fear, which are courage, bravery, and confidence. So today we'll look at those two ideas, fear and courage, through some of the examples that are found in the pages of the Bible. We'll see what lessons we can learn from both these examples. In the book of Leviticus, God laid out some promises to the Israelites. Let's look at Leviticus chapter 26, verse 3. Beginning of verse 3, we'll look at a few verses here. Leviticus chapter 26, verse 3. The heading under my Bible is the promise of blessing and retribution. Leviticus 26, verse 3. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them. So there's an if statement. There's a series of if-then statements, meaning that if the people will do what is specified, then God will pour out his blessing. Now, God prefaces this by repeating that the Israelites are not to worship idols and are to keep the Sabbath. So there's the if statement in verse 3. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, verse 4 comes the promise. Then I will give you rain in due season. As Mr. Rigord referred to that in the opening prayer about rain. Then I will give you rain in due season, and the land will yield her increase, and the trees of the field will yield their fruit. So there's the then statement. So we saw the if statement in verse 3, and the then statement in verse 4. Now let's look at verse 6. And I will give you peace in the land, and you will lie down, and none will make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land, neither will the sword go through your land. Notice that phrase, none will make you afraid. God told the Israelites that if they obey him, they won't have anyone or anything to fear. Nothing will make them anxious. Realize that anxiety is a part of fear. Dropping down to verse 14 of Leviticus 26, verse 14, we read what would happen if the Israelites did not obey God. Verse 14, but if you will not listen to me and will not do all these commandments, and if you will despise my statutes, or if you abhor my judgments, so that you will not do all my commandments, but that you break my covenant, I will also do this to you. I will even appoint over you terror, that is panic, destruction, or trouble, and consumption, and the burning fever that will consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart, and you will sow your seed in vain, for your enemies will eat it. So if the Israelites would not obey God, then he would take away the comfort and protection that God offered them. There's one other point in verse 36. And upon them that are left alive of you, I will send a faintness into their hearts in the lands of their enemies, and the sound of a shaken leaf will chase them. And they will flee, as fleeing from a sword. And they will fall when no one pursues them. So notice that. The Israelites would become so afraid that even the sound of a rustling leaf would scare them. And they would run away when no one's chasing them. They would be gripped by fear, paranoia. Those would be some of the consequences of their disobedience. As humans, we tend to fear the unknown. And the Israelites were like that as well. They were afraid of moving out of Egypt for a number of reasons. One is that they were comfortable, in spite of their bondage to the Egyptians, but they knew what they had, and they were comfortable with that. They knew where they were. In spite of the many miracles that God performed on their journey, they were still fearful. The miracles showed that God would take care of them, what God would do for them. But the Israelites didn't see that. Instead of trusting and obeying God, they were afraid. They were scared. They were scared because of their disobedience. If they had obeyed God, they would have been able to live in peace and with a sense of security. Let's take a look at a few people who showed that they were afraid, who had an improper fear. And let's see what we can learn from them. The example of the golden calf is written of in Exodus chapter 32. We won't read the whole chapter, but we'll pick up some highlights, beginning in verse 1 of Leviticus, of Exodus, Exodus 32, verse 1. Exodus chapter 32, verse 1. And when the people saw that Moses delayed to come down from the mountain, the people gathered themselves together to Aaron and said to him, "Go up, make us gods, which will go before us. For as for this Moses, the man that brought us up out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." We don't know what happened to him. We haven't heard from him for a while. We don't know what's going on. The Israelites were getting restless. Moses was gone for about a month and a half by this time. The Israelites, perhaps they thought that he had died, or that something terrible had happened to him. But instead of trusting that he would return, they went to Aaron and told him they wanted, you know, that they wanted to have something they could worship and trust, something visible, something visual. Verse 2, and Aaron said to them, "Break off the golden earrings which are in the ears of your wives and your sons and of your daughters and bring them to me." So this brings up the question, why would Aaron do that? Why would Aaron not tell the Israelites that what they were about to do was wrong, was in contravention of God's command? Why would he give in so easily, seemingly, to their demands? There's no indication that Aaron resisted or questioned the Israelites about their motives. Perhaps he too had doubts as to whether Moses would return. Perhaps Aaron himself was afraid. He might have been afraid to stand up to the Israelites because obviously he was outnumbered by them. That could be a source of fear. But rather than being brave and standing up to them, telling them that it was wrong to make false gods, Aaron gave in. It seemed like the easy thing to do, really. Fear can be like that. It can make an easy way out of a situation appear more appealing. Later on in Exodus 32, Aaron was questioned by Moses about his motives, down in verse 21. Exodus 32, verse 21. And Moses said to Aaron, What did this people do to you that you have brought so great a sin upon them? So what happened, Aaron? Why'd you do it? Notice Aaron's reply in verse 32. Aaron said, "Let not the anger of my Lord become hot. You know the people that they are set on mischief." So it's, you know, blame someone else. That's always a good thing to do, right? Blame someone else instead of taking responsibility. Aaron blamed the Israelites. Well, after all, they did have a bit of a track record, so even though it was Aaron himself who made the golden calf, And again, it appears that Aaron was afraid to face the consequences of his actions. He was afraid to take responsibility for what he did. And it appears that he too had a fear of the unknown. What can we learn from Aaron's example? Well, we shouldn't be afraid to stand up to others, especially when it comes to obedience to God. It's easy to blame others, but we must not be afraid to take responsibility for our actions. Another example of the wrong kind of fear we'll look at involves Saul. The story begins in 1 Samuel 10 and verse 8. Samuel gave Saul some specific instructions. 1 Samuel chapter 10, verse 8. 1 Samuel 10 and verse 8. "And you shall go down before me, that is, ahead of me, to Gilgal. And behold, I will come down to you to offer burnt offerings and to sacrifice peace offerings. You shall stay 7 days until I come to you and make known to you what you shall do." The key phrase here is, "until I come to you." And over the next 7 days, over the course of the next week, something happens. Dropping down to chapter 13, verse 7 of 1 Samuel. 1 Samuel 13, verse 7. "And the Hebrews went over Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. And Saul was still in Gilgal, and the people followed him, trembling." The word "trembling," according to Strong's Hebrew and Greek dictionary, means shuddering with terror. They were genuinely fearful. And verse 8, "And he tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. But Samuel did not come to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him." So obviously, communication back in those days was a bit more difficult. Saul couldn't just make a phone call and say, "I'm stuck here. Hold off until I get there." But on the other hand, Saul did follow part of the instructions from Samuel. He did wait the 7 days. But then Saul took it upon himself to move forward. Verse 9. "And Saul said, 'Bring a burnt offering here to me and peace offerings.' And he offered the burnt offering." And then Saul showed up. Verse 10. "And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came. And Saul went out to meet him that he might salute him." How often has that happened to us? If only we had waited a little longer. If only we had followed the directions more carefully. Unfortunately, Saul did not follow the instructions properly. Saul, you'll remember from chapter 10, verse 8, just read, was to wait until Samuel came. Then Saul was to receive further instructions from Samuel. But instead, Saul rationalizes his behavior. Verse 11, "Samuel said, 'What have you done?' And Saul said, 'Because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and you did not come in the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves at Michmash, I said, the Philistines will come down now on me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication to the Lord. And I forced myself and offered a burnt offering.'" So again, he's rationalizing. He's going through all these excuses as to why he did what he did. Verse 13, "Samuel said to Saul, 'You have done foolishly. You have not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you, for now the Lord would have established your kingdom on Israel forever.'" Was it fear that motivated Saul to act the way he did? No one can make a case for that. He was fearful that the Philistines would attack if he waited any longer. But rather than waiting for Samuel to come to Gilgal, Saul acted hastily and suffered the consequences, as noted in verse 12. Perhaps this whole incident was a test to see how Saul would react. What can we learn from Saul's example? Well, Saul appeared to lack the faith that Samuel would come to him. When we lack faith, we become fearful, just as Saul feared the Philistines. Faith dispels fear. One more example of fear we'll look at today involves Peter. Over in the book of Luke, Luke chapter 22, verses 54 through 60. Luke chapter 22, verses 54 through 60. Very famous incident. Luke chapter 22, verse 54. And laying hold on him, they led Jesus away and brought him into the high priest's house. And Peter followed afar off. He wasn't close behind. He was far away. And lighting a fire in the middle of the court, and they sitting down, Peter sat in the midst, perhaps trying to blend in and not to be noticed by others. Having a fire indicated that it was cool outside. So Mark notes that he was warming himself, so perhaps he had a scarf to cover his face as well. Verse 56, but a certain slave girl saw him as he sat by the fire and earnestly looked on him and said, this man was with him also. Implicating Peter that he was with Jesus. Verse 57, and he, that is Peter, denied him, saying, woman, I do not know him. I don't know what you're talking about. And after a little while, another woman saw him and said, you also are of them. Peter said, man, I am not. So Peter was getting agitated by the constant questions. Then about an hour afterward, another confidently affirmed, saying, truly, this one was with him, was also with him, for he is a Galilean. And verse 60, and Peter said, man, I do not know what you say. And immediately, while he still spoke, the cock crowed. Remember that Jesus earlier told Peter that he would deny him three times before the cock crowed. Why would Peter deny Jesus? Was he afraid? Was he scared? He spent a good deal of time with him, so he knew Jesus quite well. So really there shouldn't have been any reason why. He knew Jesus very well, and perhaps that was part of Peter's problem. Because he was known to associate with Jesus, perhaps he thought he might meet a similar fate that Jesus did. Peter was probably afraid of what would happen to him. He had a fear of the unknown. Rather than being confident and courageously admitting that he knew Jesus, instead, Peter lied about it. But when he realized what he had done, he cried bitterly, as Matthew states in his account of this incident. One of the things we can learn from this, we have to trust God to see us through any difficult times that we go through. We don't have to be afraid of what might happen to us. Now, undoubtedly, Peter would have been better off if he had simply admitted that he knew Jesus. But instead, he stayed some distance behind when Jesus was led away, tried to blend in with the crowd, tried to meld with those around him. And he was angered by those who recognized him, those who were constantly questioning. Instead, he stayed some distance behind Jesus when he was led away. Perhaps Peter's anger was a result of his guilty conscience, knowing that those who recognized him were correct. Really, Peter had no leg to stand on, in a sense. He even went so far as to lie that he knew Jesus. Another example that we'll look at is in Numbers chapter 13. Back in the book of Numbers again, or the Old Testament rather, book of Numbers. Numbers chapter 13. This example shows the two characteristics that we're looking at today. Fear and courage. This is the account of the two of the 12 spies who went out to scout out the promised land. 12 spies were leaders of each of the tribes of Israel, and their task that they were given to do was rather simple. They were to see the land, to see what it consisted of. Was it good for agriculture? Were there trees there whose wood could be harvested? What was the water supply like? Things like that. They were on a scouting mission. They were also to see where the people lived, how many there were, whether they lived in tents or in cities, and if the cities were fortified. And this mission was to last 40 days. Numbers chapter 13, beginning in verse 26. And when they left and came to Moses and Aaron, and to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, to the wilderness of Paran, to Kadesh. And they brought back word to them and to all the congregation and showed them the fruit of the land. Remember that they came back carrying a cluster of grapes that took two men to carry. The report was then delivered, beginning of verse 27. And they showed him, and they told him and said, "We came to the land where you sent us, and surely it flows with milk and honey. And this is the fruit of it. However, the people that dwell in the land are strong. The cities are walled and very great. And we also saw the children of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land to the south, and the Hittites and the Jebusites and the Amorites dwell in the mountains. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and by the coast of Jordan." So this report came back with a positive start. But that didn't last long, though. Right away, the negative aspects of the promised land came out. The people were strong. There were lots of them, too. They were well armed. They lived in walled or fortified cities. Then Caleb spoke in verse 30. "And Caleb stilled the people before Moses and said, 'Let us go up at once to possess it, for we are well able to overcome it.'" So Caleb, instead of being afraid, showed courage here by standing up and saying that, "Let's go." Unlike the other spies whose report was given first, Caleb acknowledged that the report was true. But rather than looking afraid to go forward, rather than being afraid to look to go forward, Caleb was confident that they could take the land. There was nothing to fear. But in spite of that, the negative reports continued. Verse 31, "But the men that went up with him and said, 'We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we.'" So again, there's that fear coming in. And all those that went to check out the promised land saw the same things. But 10 of them came back with a negative impression and believed that it would be a mistake to move forward. But there were two who said it could be done. Joshua and Caleb were the only two who were not afraid to take the land. They trusted God. The story continues in Numbers 14. Let's pick it up in verse 6 of Numbers 14. "And Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, of those that searched the land, tore their clothes. And they spoke to all the company of the sons of Israel, saying, 'The land which we possess, the land which we pass through to search is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us," notice there again, "if the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land to give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey." Again, there's an offense statement. Verse 9, "Only do not rebel against the Lord, neither fear the people of the land, for they are bread for us. Their protection has moved from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them." So Joshua and Caleb showed courage in their report. They didn't allow themselves to be scared by the negative reports of the majority of the spies, even though they're about to be stoned for their what they said. But Joshua and Caleb did not dwell on the negative aspects of moving into the promised land. Instead, they focused on the positive. Rather than being filled with fear and terror, dwelling on the negative things, Joshua and Caleb emphasized the positive. And that's a lesson we too can learn. Don't dwell on the negative, but instead emphasize the positive. Let's look at another example that fits these two characteristics of fear and courage. This one also involves Peter, and is found in Matthew 14, beginning in verse 24. Matthew chapter 14, beginning in verse 24. Verses 24 through 31, actually. Bear in mind that earlier in this chapter, the disciples had just witnessed the miracle of the feeding of the 5,000 with the five loaves and the two fish. So that would have been quite something to witness. The disciples were now in a boat on the way to Capernaum. Jesus stayed behind to spend some time in prayer. We pick up the story in Matthew 14, verse 24. "But the ship was now in the midst of the sea, tossed with the waves, for the wind was contrary." In John 6, verse 19, it states that They rolled 25 or 30 furlongs, about 5 or 6 kilometers, which is about 3 or 4 miles. They were literally in the middle of the sea. And I know from experience, and I hadn't sailed for about 40 years, and did a little bit of sailing in the Adirondacks in the summer, and the wind was quite strong. And quite, it was a little, not being on the water for that long, it was a little bit scary, I must admit. But the disciples were literally in the middle of the sea. The wind was so strong, and it was coming from the wrong direction, and they could not use their sails. So instead, they had to row. If you've ever had to row a boat or a canoe against even a slight current or a slight breeze, just imagine how difficult it would be to row in a storm. Just imagine trying to row a boat in a storm as the disciples were doing here. Verse 25, in the fourth watch of the night, so very early in the morning, perhaps between 3 and 6 a.m., Jesus went to them walking on the sea. When the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a spirit," and they cried out with fear. So they didn't recognize, they didn't know what was going on here. They were genuinely scared about what they were seeing. It was more than likely it was still dark out. Perhaps they saw the shadowy figure walking toward them, and that would have added to their fear, not knowing exactly what it was. On the one hand, we can understand their concern. On the other hand, the disciples had just witnessed that great miracle, so really nothing should have surprised them in that sense. Going on, verse 27, but straightway Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer, it is I, be not afraid." So Jesus said, "It's me, don't be alarmed, don't be scared." But Peter wasn't completely convinced, though. He wanted more proof. Verse 28, and Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it's really you, let me come to you on the water." So this is pretty brave on Peter's part. Verse 29, and he said, "Come." And when Peter was come down out of the ship, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. Now, that was the brave part. This is where Peter was not afraid. But perhaps it was then that Peter was beginning to realize that this was not normal. Should not be walking on the water. This should not be happening. And then perhaps reality set in. In verse 30, but when he saw the wind was strong, he was afraid. He was scared. And began to sink, or beginning to sink, he cried, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand, caught him, and said to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why do you doubt?" So Peter showed both sides of the coin here. He was brave and courageous, but he was also fearful and afraid. In verse 31, Jesus gives us one of the cures or remedies of fear, and that is faith. Another example of courage and bravery involves three Jewish men back in the book of Daniel. The story of their experience is found in Daniel chapter 3. It begins when the king Nebuchadnezzar, obviously did not suffer from low self-esteem, built an image of himself that was, shall we say, a bit larger than wallet size. It was about 90 yards tall. The king decreed that everyone in his inner circle must come to the dedication of this enormous statue of himself. Failure to show up at the ceremony was not an option. There were dire consequences for those who did not attend at the ceremony. Those individuals who were no-shows would be rounded up and tossed into a furnace and burned. The three Jewish men were conspicuous by their absence at this dedication ceremony. Those three men held high positions in Nebuchadnezzar's administration. They were, of course, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They were over the affairs of the province of Babylon. And that's where we pick up the story, Daniel chapter 3, verse 12. There are certain Jewish men whom you have set over the business of the province of Babylon, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These three men, O king, do not heed you. They do not serve your gods nor worship the golden image which you have set up. It was obviously well known that these three men were different. There was something different about them. And in his anger and rage, which is never a good combination, the king determined that these three men, or demanded that they appear before him. He was determined that they would follow his instructions. So he demanded that they appear before him. He gave them one more opportunity to bow down and worship the image that he had made of himself. Verse 16 shows the response of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Daniel 3, verse 16. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego answered and said to King O Nebuchadnezzar, "We have no need to answer you on this matter." They knew that it would be wrong to disobey God's commandments about having other gods besides the one true God and worshiping other gods. These three men stood up for what they believed. They showed courage by doing so. Notice the rest of their statement in the next two verses, verse 17. If it is so that our God whom we serve is able, notice that, if it is so that our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace, then he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. Notice again, there's that if-then statement. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods, nor worship the golden image which you have set up. So their response to the king's demand was simple. If it's God's will, the God that we serve, that he preserve our lives, then he will do so. But even if he doesn't save us, we still won't worship the image of you. That's a very brave stand to take. Their reply obviously did not sit well with the king. He was even more enraged. And when that happens, usually leads to some irrational behavior, and the king was no exception to that. He then demanded that the furnace be heated up. You know, this is not a case of just throwing a few more logs in the fire. The fire was not to be made just a little bit hotter, but seven times hotter. It's a lot of fuel. In verse 20, the king's irrational behavior continued. Verse 20 of Daniel 3, and he commanded mighty men in his army, not just anybody, but mighty men in his army, to tie up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and to throw them into the burning fiery furnace. Notice that he commanded mighty men to bind Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Verse 21, then these three men were tied up in their slippers, in their tunics, in their hats, and with and their other clothes, and were thrown into the middle of the burning fiery furnace. There's no indication here that the three men were panicking. There's no indication that they ever doubted God, that they ever doubted that he would save them. They already showed that they were not afraid, and even if God did not save them, they would still not obey the king's edict. They displayed a level of bravery and courage that is an example for us even today. Verse 22 shows a very great deal of irony. The king's then, because the king's commandment was urgent, and the fire, the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. How ironic! As if to check his own sanity, the king wanted to confirm that three men actually were tossed into the fire, that there were three men in there. But the king became confused when he saw four figures walking around in the flames, as noted in verse 24 and 25. He knew something was different about that fourth image, that fourth person that he saw. And in verse 26, he called for the three men to come out of the furnace. Verse 27 shows an interesting aspect to this whole story. Verse 27, and the satraps, the prefects, the governors, and the king's advisors gathered and saw these men on whose bodies the fire had no power. And their hair on their head was not scorched, nor were their slippers changed, nor had the smell of fire clung to them. They went out, or they came out of the furnace the same way they came in. It's no indication of being in a fire at all. Now, if you've ever sat in front of a campfire, or even a wood stove or a wood fireplace, it doesn't take long. And you can, the smell of the wood starts to permeate your clothes and gets into your hair. It takes a long time to get it out. This was not the case here. The king was amazed, to say the least. So much so that he had a change of heart. Verse 28, Nebuchadnezzar spoke and said, "Blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who has sent his angel and has delivered his servants who trusted in him and have changed the king's words, and have given their bodies that they might not serve nor worship any god except their own true God, or their own God. And a decree, verse 21, or 29 rather, and a decree is given by me that every people, nation, and language who speak anything amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut into pieces, and his house shall be made waste, because there is no other God who can deliver in this way. Then the king made Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego prosper in the province of Babylon. There are a number of lessons from these three men that we can learn. They believed that God would deliver them, one way or another. And their belief allayed any fears of what the king would do to them. They displayed tremendous courage and bravery in standing up for what they believed, for standing up for the truth, for standing up for what was right, for not giving in. Their examples of unwavering faith and trust in God had such an impact on King Nebuchadnezzar that he saw that God was the one and only true God to be worshipped. He had a change of heart. Very powerful lesson there. Another lesson of bravery that we'll look at involves Nathan. Nathan and David were best of friends. Nathan was given the task I'm sure he would have preferred not to do. After David's many sins with Bathsheba, God appointed Nathan to talk to David about those sins. David was at a low point in his life. Nathan was probably putting off this meeting with David as long as possible, hoping that maybe David would see it on his own. But perhaps he was hoping that David would come to the realization that he had done wrong and that he had harmed a lot of people with his sins. And perhaps Nathan was hoping that God would work something else out, that he wouldn't have to be meet with David on these circumstances. But nonetheless, the time came for Nathan to confront David. Nathan realized that it was his God-given duty to do so. God had given him that task, and God had appointed him to meet with David. We pick up the story in 2 Samuel chapter 12, verse 1. Nathan started telling David a story. Verse 1 of 2 Samuel 12. And the Lord sent Nathan to David. And he came to him and said to him, there were two men in one city, one rich and one poor. The rich one had exceedingly many flocks and herds. He was very well off. But the poor one had nothing except one little ewe lamb, which he had bought and nourished up. And it grew up together with him and with his sons. It ate of his own food and drank from his own cup. It lay in his bosom and was like a daughter to him. So like a member of the family, this particular lamb. Verse 4, and there came a certain traveler to the rich man, and he spared to take of his own flock and of his own herd to dress for the traveler that had come to him. But instead he took the poor man's lamb and dressed it for the man who had come to him. Nathan certainly had David's attention by this point with his story. A very touching story. It showed how much Nathan cared for David. David's response is found in verse 5. David's anger was greatly kindled against the man. And he said to Nathan, as the Lord lives, this man who has done this shall surely die. And he shall restore the lamb fourfold, because he did this thing, because he had no pity. Then Nathan made a very bold statement in verse 7. Nathan said to David, you are the man. So says the Lord, the God of Israel, I anointed you king over Israel, and I delivered you out of the hand of Saul. Nathan was put in a very uncomfortable position. He was quite possibly spent a lot of time in preparation with this meeting with David. It's probably something that he put off for quite a while. That preparation undoubtedly included spending time in prayer to God, asking for guidance, asking for the right words to say to his close friend. He knew David well, but he did not know. But that didn't make the task any easier. He did not know how David would react. In the end, though, Nathan showed a great deal of courage in confronting David. It had to be done. It was something God wanted Nathan to do. What can we learn from this? Well, Nathan showed great courage because he trusted God. God gave him a task to complete, and Nathan did it. It was probably not easy. But in the end, Nathan had nothing to fear because he trusted that God would deliver him. David's actions with Bathsheba, Uriah, and the others who were involved in the story were despicable. And David had to realize the harm that he caused. He was so far from God at this point in his life that it was good that he came back, that he realized that he had done wrong. But it took someone to point it out to him, and that took bravery on Nathan's part. David had to realize the cause of the harm that he had caused others. And God used Nathan as an example. So when we obey God, we have nothing to fear. The Apostle Paul is another example of someone who showed bravery and courage. Some of the events of Paul's life can be summarized in a few verses. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 24 through 28. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verses 24 through 28. Verse 24, Paul relating some of the experiences that he had gone through in his life. He says, 5 times from the Jews I received 40 stripes minus one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. Once I was stoned. 3 times I was shipwrecked. I have spent a night and a day in the deep. I have been in travels often, in dangers from waters, in dangers from robbers, in dangers from my race, my fellow people were against me at times, in dangers from the heathen, in dangers in the city, in dangers in the wilderness, in dangers on the sea, in dangers among false brothers. I have been in hardship and toil, often in watchings or sleeplessness, in hunger and thirst, often in fastings, and cold and nakedness. Besides the things outside conspiring against me daily, the care for all the churches. So Paul knew what it was like to face adversity. His life was filled with trials before and after his conversion. His life was threatened. He was put in prison for what he taught. Imagine being stoned and beaten. Imagine being in the water all night or being shipwrecked, not just once, but 3 times. Those are just some of the physical hardships that he went through. Imagine traveling under various threats, being stoned and beaten. He faced problems wherever he traveled, whether it was in the wilderness or in the cities. And even today, there are problems with traveling the wilderness and in the cities. He had many sleepless nights. He was cold. He was thirsty. He was hungry. He was naked. He was put up with false teachers. He had to put up, rather, with false teachers. He had to deal with people who would rather see him dead. Imagine living that kind of life. Yet through it all, Peter persevered. He could have given up in fear. He could have chosen to walk away from the problems that he faced. Rather, he showed great courage in dealing with the issues that he dealt with every day. He knew that God could and would deliver him if he obeyed him. Perhaps that's the greatest lesson we can learn from Paul. Paul knew that God could and would deliver him if he obeyed him. 1 Peter 3, verse 14 summarizes it quite nicely. 1 Peter 3, verse 14. First Peter chapter 3 and verse 14. But if you suffer for righteousness' sake, happy are you, and be not afraid of the terror, neither be troubled. The translation, the God's Word translation of this verse puts it this way. But even if you suffer for what God approves, you are blessed. Don't be afraid of those who want to harm you. Don't get upset. That takes a lot of courage. God will take care of us if we obey Him. We can have the confidence, the courage, and the bravery to go through the trials that we face, and we will face trials. We should not be afraid. So what can we take away from this message today? We looked at several examples of fear and courage. There are many, many more examples of those two characteristics in the pages of the Bible. We don't have to worry about this 14-page list of fears and phobias when we obey God. We don't have to worry about fears that people suffer from. As we saw in Leviticus chapter 26, if we obey God and His commandments, God will offer many blessings, including protection and peace of mind. If we disobey God, we suffer from paranoia, just as the Israelites did. In Exodus 32, we saw how Aaron gave in, made the golden calf. Instead of being courageous and brave, he was afraid to stand up for what was right. He took the seemingly easy way out by giving in. He also took the easy way out by blaming others for his actions. In 1 Samuel 10 and 13, we saw how Saul gave in to his fear that led to him disobeying the instructions from Samuel. Saul took things into his own hands instead. When Saul did that, he left God out of the picture, and he was fearful of the Philistines. In Luke chapter 22, we saw how Peter showed fear by keeping his distance from Jesus and trying to blend in with the rest of the crowd, rather than standing up for the truth. Lying is never a good option. When Peter realized what he had done, he was deeply sorrowful. In Numbers 13 and 14, we looked at the 12 men who spied the promised land. 10 of the spies came back with negative reports and were afraid to move forward. Joshua and Caleb saw the same things as the other 10 did, but they displayed courage and bravery by trusting that God could and would take them into the promised land in spite of the perceived obstacles. In Matthew 14, we saw how Peter showed both characteristics of courage and fear. On the one hand, he went out of the boat on the water to meet Jesus, walking on the water. That took courage. On the other hand, he doubted and feared and began to drown until Jesus rescued him. Faith is the key to overcoming fear. In Daniel 3, we saw the example of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego courageously standing up to the king for what they believed. They had the faith that God would deliver them one way or the other, so they did not fear what the king would do to them. Their example of courage and bravery was noticed by the king, and it had a positive impact on the king, Nebuchadnezzar. In 2 Samuel 12, we saw how Nathan displayed courage when he had to confront David about his sins with Bathsheba. God chose Nathan for that task, and Nathan did it. And in the end, we have nothing to fear, because he knew that God was with him. And when we obey God, we have nothing to fear too, because we know that God is with us. In 2 Corinthians 11, we saw some of the things that the Apostle Paul faced in his life. He did not have an easy life. He could have lived his life in fear. Rather, he showed courage and bravery because he obeyed God. He knew that God would take care of him as long as Paul continued to teach the truth. So let's take to heart the words in 1 Peter 3, verse 14. But even if you suffer for doing what God approves, you are blessed. Don't be afraid of those who want to harm you. Don't get upset. So rather than being fearful, let's instead grow and move forward with bravery and courage.